Welcome to the Six Figure Developer Podcast, the podcast where we talk about new and exciting technologies, professional development, clean code, career advancement, and more. I'm John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I'm John Ash.
With us today is Matthew Jones. Matthew is a programmer, a dad, a husband, a geek, a blogger, a speaker, lots of things. For the last 10 plus years, he's been working in business with the .NET framework and dabbling in other technologies along the way. Welcome, Matt.
Thanks for having me.
So before we get started on sort of talking about the meat of the podcast, would you just sort of give our listeners a little introduction to yourself? Maybe tell them how you got started in the industry?
Sure. So I started relatively late. I was already in college before I ever programmed anything. In high school, I was in a robotics club that competed in the first competition. And in my robotics club, I decided I wanted to be someone who built robots. So I went to school as an electrical engineering major and saw the syllabus for the four-year plan of getting that degree, saw that there were five semesters of physics, and basically said, nope, not doing that. So switched my degree to computer systems engineering, which was a fusion of computer science and electrical, and found that I liked the programming side far more than the electrical side. And so got my degree from Arizona State and went to work for some big multinational companies in programming and been doing it ever since.
Very cool. So what do you do these days? What are you working on?
So I work on various internal and external apps for my employer. I'm not sure if we're allowed to say the employer name, but I do all kinds of different ASP.NET, ASP.NET Core application development. I do some SQL. I do some React. I do some DevOps. I do lots of various things. My position at my employer is lead developer. So that basically just means I'm in charge of architecting applications and getting out of my other programmer's way.
What size is the team there?
So I've had various teams. My current team is 3. My prior team was 10.
So a small team like that, and it sounds like you're kind of the jack of all trades, or if somebody else isn't doing it, it falls to you?
Yeah, pretty much. I set the direction and we all follow it until I figure out whether or not that was right in the first place, and then we change.
Several months ago at Codepalooza, I went to a talk of yours that was time management for the distracted developer, mostly because I saw distracted developer and time management. So the whole title. And once I sat in on the talk and you started giving it, it really resonated with me. So right after that, I walked up to you and asked you to come on the show. If you could you give us kind of like the introduction to that talk for the audience?
Sure. So the introduction goes something like this. Distraction is a common occurrence in all of our lives. Programmers are thought workers. We work primarily in our mind. Our coding is a mere side effect of what we actually do. So because of that, we have to deal with the daily distractions of just working in such an environment. Now, there are some of us, myself included, who have a little bit more difficulty with doing something like this. So in my particular case, I am diagnosed attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. My particular flavor of that condition is that I find it very difficult to pay attention for long periods of time. And so I've had to learn various methods of dealing with this condition in an environment in which we pretty much do nothing but think. Hmm. We think about problems all day, every day. And for someone who's very easily distracted, that becomes quite the burden. So about a year and a half ago, something along those lines, I started compiling a list of different techniques and tools and just thought exercises and stuff like that for various ways that I could help myself be less distracted, be more in a state of flow. The talk was largely about how I think other people can help themselves be better developers, be less distractible, be more on target, on focus, whatever they need to be at that time, by doing simpler things, doing simple strategies that help them maintain or establish the focus they need to do their job. The main point of the talk was that these different strategies are there to help us get into that state. I mentioned flow. That's a psychological state in which there is nothing but you and the problem you're working on. So we've all heard the phrase in the zone, right? That's the definition of the psychological state of flow. And as an ADHD person, it is far more difficult for me to enter that state than it is for a quote-unquote normal person. I use that term very lightly because there is no such thing as normal. My struggle since I was 7 has been to rein in my brain's tendency to think about things other than what I want to be thinking about at that time. And the talk was an overview of that.
So of those techniques that you were finding, what was the one that you found to be, or one that you found to be really, really successful for yourself?
So for me personally, the biggest technique that helped me was clearing my physical space. I find that disorganization in the real world is at least partially reflective of disorganization in the mind. So for me, because I'm easily distracted, if it takes me a long time to find something, it will take me a long time to actually accomplish something. And then what I call my frustration threshold, the point at which I give up out of frustration, is way lower than it is for lots of other people. And so if I can't find the thing, I'm just not going to do it. So part of the strategy that I use is getting rid of things that I don't actually use. My wife and I are on the same page with this. And so throughout our house, we will regularly, like every 3 months, we will go through the house and be like, did we use that in the last year? And if the answer is no, it's freaking gone. Donated, trash, something. Because we both cannot stand the clutter. And for me personally, that clutter makes it extraordinarily difficult to get anything done because of the frustration threshold. Mm-hmm. So the biggest thing that I did to improve my ability to focus was to get rid of the things causing distraction, get rid of the clutter.
What if the things that are causing distraction are environmental or your coworkers or just the situation that you find yourself in?
Get rid of your coworkers.
Well, that's not always possible. But I mean, you know, I've worked in environments where I had my own office. I've worked in environments where I've shared a closet space with 3 other people. I've worked in horrific open office concept with 50 to 100 people on the same floor that you can overhear every single conversation going on. So what are the tips and tricks if you have to deal with those different environmental conditions?
Okay. So again, the point of doing any of these things is to remove the thing that causes distraction. So one of the things that causes distraction, particularly in an open office environment, is just random noise that comes floating to your ears. One of the biggest things that I've done is I've used noise-canceling headphones at work. And you don't even have to be playing something on them. You don't have to be listening to music. You don't have to be listening to a podcast. And in fact, for easily distractible people, those might actually be a detriment to what you're trying to do. Just with the noise-canceling feature enabled, put them on, and because that tunes out all of the things that you can't otherwise turn off. You can't turn off your hearing. By using the noise-canceling headphones, we get rid of some of those extra distractions. Now, as for dealing with other aspects of working in such an environment, namely dealing with, say, coworkers that need your attention, or shall we say, need your attention more often than you think is required, there are various ways that I've dealt with for dealing with that. At one of my previous jobs, we were in cubicles. It was still an open floor, but we all had cubicles with walls. And so one of the things I would do is I would hang a yellow plastic chain across the entrance to my cubicle whenever I needed people to not bug me. The first couple times, nobody understood, and they would just go under the chain. And I would be like, dude, look at the chain. That means I need you to not bug me for a little bit. And eventually, everybody got it. Now, with my current team, it's only 3 of us, and one of us works remote. So it's really just me and another guy sitting at conjoined desks in our office. it's really nice with a small team because anytime one of us needs to initiate a conversation, we can actually do it over our chat system. So in our case, we use Microsoft Teams, but you might use Slack or whatever else, because then they can say, hey, I need your attention, but I don't need it literally this second. I need it when you're able to focus on it. And when that's possible, then we just pick up the conversation in real life. Don't even talk over Teams or Slack or whatever else at that point.
That actually brings up an interesting question, because I've talked to a lot of people who like really get distracted with like email notifications or those pop-up chat notifications. And while, yeah, it's like whenever you get a chance to, sometimes like you can sort of feel the need to like respond right away, or that can be one of the things that sort of pops me out of the flow. How have you dealt with dealing with those notification pop-ups in such a way that sort of allows you to sort of maintain your flow and your focus?
So there's two different ways to do this. One of them is to time box internally, and the other one is to time box externally. Here's what I mean by that. By time boxing internally, what you do is you say, okay, I am now going to say I am unavailable for everything for an hour, for 30 minutes, for however long, because I need to solve this particular problem, or I need to accomplish this particular task. And during those times, you allow yourself to not have to worry about those things. Maybe you put yourself in do not disturb mode on Slack or Teams or whatever system you're using so that you no longer get notifications, at least for that length of time. Because especially for someone like me who's easily distractible, those little pop-ups in the lower right corner make it almost impossible to do my job because I'm fully invested in this problem and all of a sudden something comes up that may not even involve me. But I'm reading it now and I've derailed my train of thought because I'm trying to now solve this problem that I don't necessarily need to be focusing on. So you can time box internally by saying, hey, I am now only going to do this one thing and ignore everything else for a certain amount of time. The other way you can time box is to say, okay, I am now, for example, only going to answer emails when I get into the office for the first 30 minutes. It's the only time I'm available to answer email. Because to me, email is one of the lowest priority forms of communication. The highest priority form is somebody showing up at your desk because you literally cannot ignore them at that point. Or rather, you can, but it's probably a bad idea. So the highest priority form is somebody showing up at your desk. The next highest priority is something like a phone call because you can ignore a phone call, but eventually you'll either pick up a reputation or people will just be like, okay, this guy never answers my calls. What the heck is going on here? So you don't really want to ignore that if you can. Although if you need to be in do not disturb mode, you can put your phone calls on, go straight to voicemail or whatever you need. The key point of all of this is specifying a time at which you are available to be interrupted, because that's the real key killer. That's the thing that does not allow programmers to stay in the state of flow. That's interruption. And so if you can minimize the amount of times that you are available to be interrupted, you can maximize the amount of time that you stay in the flow state.
I think that the research seems to indicate that any interruption can take you as much as 25 minutes to get back the train of thought that you had.
Absolutely. See, the issue with this entire idea of distractibility is that programmers are primarily thought workers. We do all our work in our head. And because we do all our work in our head, we are tracking tens, hundreds, maybe thousands of variables at any given time. And somebody showing up with something completely unrelated to the problem that we're currently solving wrecks all of that variable tracking. And so now, when we're done dealing with whatever interruption just happened, we now have to pick up all those variables and all that context and all that stuff that we lost when the interruption happened. And that takes time. The ramping up takes time.
So that makes me wonder how you feel about a particular technique that I have enjoyed in the past. And when I am centered, like when everything is going good, I can use this technique and I like it, but it almost seems counterintuitive to flow. The technique is the Pomodoro technique.
Yes, I've heard of this.
Because you're doing like, you know, you do like half an hour and then you stop yourself for 5 minutes or so. So if you know, if it takes another 25 minutes to get back into flow, then you're only getting 5 minutes or so of flow, you know, each Pomodoro.
Yeah.
So what's your impressions on that technique?
So Pomodoro technique to my understanding, is extraordinarily useful for people who want to track problems like you're saying. One of the issues we have with programming is that it is very, very easy to sit down at your desk, start to solve a problem, look at the clock. Oh, it's 9 a.m. Cool. I'm good for a while. Da-da-da-da-da. Do some few keystrokes. Look at the clock. Oh, it's 5 p.m. That happens, where we just lose complete track of time. With Pomodoro, you kind of clear your mind every 5 minutes, every 30 minutes, 4 or 5 minutes, such that you can come at things with a fresh look. Because the problem with losing track of time is that you don't get that fresh look. You don't get that rested eyes, clear mind, focused ability, because you've been staring at the same problem for the last 8 hours. It's one of the reasons why I tell people on my team, you do not want to do things like work overtime regularly, because that is how you lose your focus. That is how you lose the ability to focus. So Pomodoro technique is really great, because you basically come back with fresh eyes every 30 minutes. And those fresh eyes allow you to solve these problems more quickly than if you were iterating continuously on the same set of problems. I like Pomodoro technique, or rather, I like the theory of it. I have found that as an easily distracted person, it does not help me all that much, because there's a concept in ADHD that's very similar to flow, but it's actually far more damaging, and that's called hyperfocus. And in hyperfocus, you have this compulsion to finish what you are doing. But in flow, you have a desire to finish what you are doing. And those are subtly different states. Because in flow, you want to finish. In hyperfocus, you need to finish.
And that was one of the next things that we were going to bring up. I couldn't remember what it was called, but I remember it from your talk. And I feel like I skip right over flow and go straight to hyperfocus. And it doesn't even, like, if I listen to Spotify to kind of help me get into flow, and I don't hear the first 30 seconds of the song. 30 seconds into the song, I've already tuned it out. I've tuned out the rest of the world, and I'm in flow. Mm-hmm. But then if somebody stops me, I've had to have people ask me something like 6 times in a row, because I can't stop processing. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm looking at them and they're talking, but I'm like, oh, and the variable goes there, and then the thing goes there. And
I know exactly how you feel.
I am there all the time. It doesn't take any time for me to get to that state. And then the world doesn't exist. The only thing that exists is the problem. And it feels like I almost can't work if I'm not at that point. Like, it's all or nothing. Like, if I can't get into that state, then I'm just watching YouTube videos.
Yeah, and what you're describing, that feeling of I must finish this, I must complete this task, that is indicative of hyperfocus. Again, the primary difference between flow and hyperfocus is that in flow, you want to finish. In hyperfocus, you need to finish. Hyperfocus is so damaging that way, because you no longer are able to stop. You no longer feel like you can stop once you're in hyperfocus. So you get to situations where, all right, I'll just solve this problem, and it's 4 o'clock, and all of a sudden it's 10 o'clock at night, and I missed dinner, and I missed reading time with my kids, and I missed all this stuff because I was trying to solve this bloody problem, and I don't know what to do about it now, because I still can't solve it. So now I can't go to bed because I'm focusing on it so much. I'm literally laying in bed trying to solve this problem. Pomodoro technique that you mentioned earlier, that helps a lot with hyperfocus, because it forces you to stop. The best way to break out of hyperfocus is to just stop. But the problem is, we as someone who is in hyperfocus, do not have the ability or even the desire to stop. So that's why we need to rely on external stimuli. It might be a loved one coming to remind you, hey, I need to go get this. You need to come down for dinner or something. Hey, it might be a timer on your phone that says you must be done by now. So go on downstairs, or go with your family, or go somewhere else. The really hard part about being an easily distracted individual is that most of the time we don't notice we're in hyperfocus until way too much time has already passed.
And or so the wife is yelling at you.
Yeah. Or the kids are like, why didn't you come tuck us in?
Yeah. Where is daddy?
Yeah. I've had this problem. I've been struggling with this problem for years. And unfortunately, it's one of those things that takes, I don't want to say knowledge of your own mind. That's kind of what it is. But you just got to pay actual and purposeful attention to what you're currently doing, to whether or not you want to do this or you need to do this. And if you need to do this, can you step away? Will the world end if you step away? And if the answer is no, step away.
I think the big problem is the world doesn't exist.
Yeah. Like I said, it's part of being mindful of what you're currently doing. So with flow and with hyperfocus, it takes practice to be able to even recognize that you're in those states. And in the particular case of flow, practice to recognize that you're in it and then not immediately lose it. So part of being mindful is looking for that want versus need. Looking for that, do I want to finish? Do I need to finish? And if I need to finish, can I step away? Because I'm at risk of being in hyperfocus for too long. I'm at risk of ignoring all the other responsibilities I have.
Yeah, my brother-in-law suffers from ADHD, and his wife will jokingly say that hyperfocus has helped him complete so many home improvement tasks. Once he starts it, he absolutely has to finish it. So where is that balance between that hyperfocus and healthy focus in using something like Pomodoro technique or something like that? Myself, I find that if I get distracted, I do have quite a bit of difficulty getting back in the zone, finding the flow. I find that I work best with requirements that I thoroughly understand. If I know how to implement this feature, if I understand all the requirements and have fully invested in this, I can get back in the flow pretty easily. I have the requirements in my head. I have them mapped out. I have them written down. I have something. I turn on Kill Switch Engage and just go to work and can knock it out pretty easily. But oftentimes forget lunch until hours afterwards that I'm find myself hungry. So what is that balance for those that suffer from ADHD and from those that find themselves in that same type of scenario?
The balance is understanding whether or not you will be able to innately decide that you are able to step away from the problem. So here's the problem. Because flow and hyperfocus are so similar, we often mistake one for the other. And because we mistake one for the other, it becomes extraordinarily difficult to break away. One of the things you can try to do, especially for people who are easily distracted, is to just pay attention to your own mind, listen for what you're feeling, and I hate to sound all new agey, trying to understand and recognize the things that are going through your mind. One of the scary parts of ADHD in particular is that it conditions you to not trust your own mind. It basically has forced me to say, I do not trust anything I will remember. So if I see I'm supposed to do something and say, I'll just remember to do that later, 9 times out of 10, I won't. I just do not have the capability of recalling these things that I need to do. And that is enormously frustrating because now I see all these other people and assume, and it is an assumption, that they are able to do these things that I am not able to do. And so now we've entered a spiral. We've entered this spiral of, well, I'm not normal. I can't do these things and they can. So why can they do it and I can't? And if you go ask for help for somebody who's not familiar with the condition, they'll be like, well, why can't you just remember more? Why can't you just fix these holes in your mental net, as it were? And I say, well, I do and I try, but they're bigger. I don't know what I'm supposed to do about them now. As far as where's the balance? There are, generally speaking, only two ways to figure out where your balance is. It is going to be an individual matter. And I wish I had a cure-all, a panacea, or something that would make it easy for everyone, but these are not easy conditions. And even if you don't have ADHD, it's going to be a personal thing. It's going to be a personal decision as to where it is. And it's part of figuring out what you rely upon to give you your motivation. Because in the scenario you described, John, you mentioned that you wanted to have all the requirements in order to get these things done. What you've done is you've defined what your want is in order to accomplish this task. Almost everything comes down to motivation. And it sounds like, and pardon me for extrapolating, that you've defined your motivation as being comfortable enough with the requirements so as to finish the project.
I would say that's a fair summation. I find that that's where I'm most productive, where I'm most comfortable, yes.
And I would imagine that's true for most people. We, as programmers, deal in very black and white problems. Either it works or it doesn't. Either it's on or it's off. And the problem with black and white thinking is that the world does not behave that way. Having all the requirements is a wonderful luxury. And it's a luxury that most of us go without. And so part of dealing with these conditions is dealing with situations in which you don't have all the requirements. And you have to come up with different ways, maybe not different, but additional ways of motivating yourself to get these things done. Because one of the problems with ADHD is it saps your motivation. Distractibility just saps your motivation away from you. Because it's like, well, I cannot possibly solve this problem. Why even bother? And that's the kind of thing that will cause burnout. That's the kind of thing that turns people away. So a key part of this is figuring out what your motivation is. So in my case, my motivation is learning. I always tell people, I would be a high school science teacher if I could support my family on that salary. I would do it in a heartbeat, absolutely. So my motivation is learning. So with all of my projects, I will always throw something new into the projects. I'll still accomplish all the requirements, but I'll throw something new. So my most recent project, the new thing was that we did ASP.NET Core Razor Pages. It was our first app using Razor Pages. And that gave me the motivation to do the project because in the process, I will also learn about Razor Pages and be able to either put it on the blog and help other people or use it on subsequent projects and make it that much easier on us. Or alternately, maybe Razor Pages is terrible. And we just never use it again, and then I've taken the bullet for everybody else. That works too. The key part about this, though, is discovering your motivation. It might be to learn something. It might be to do a good job. It might be to get promoted. It might be lots of various things. My motivation is learning. Your motivation could be different things. But the key part of getting all of this done is to remove the distractions from your motivation.
Very cool. Do you have some resources that you might be able to point listeners to who are trying to dealing with distractions, that are trying to, you know, maybe find some more of these techniques or understand more about ADHD, understand more about hyperfocus, etc.?
Sure. One of the best online resources is a site called Attitude Mag. So that's ADDITUDE Mag. And they are a publication specifically designed for people, and this is all people, adults and children, with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And so they publish all kinds of different ways to help yourself deal with it, to help your child deal with it. And I know that helps me in particular because not only does my father have it, my oldest son also has it. And so having a resource on how to deal with certain situations that ADHD either exacerbates or just makes generally more difficult. Attitude Mag is one of those places to get good resources. There are also two major books, and they're actual dead tree books that are very useful. One of them is called You Mean I'm Not Lazy, Stupid, or Crazy? And that's a general introduction to what does the diagnosis of ADHD mean? What does it mean for your mind? And how do you deal with it going forward? The other one, and pardon me, but the title's escaping me for a moment. I'll have to go find it. Primarily deals with how to deal with other people. Again, because ADHD conditions you to not trust your own mind, because easily distracted people don't trust their own minds, it becomes almost a level of resentment between you and the air quotes normal populace. And so this other book, and I'll have to go look up the title here in just a second, deals with a lot of that. How do you deal with that resentment? How do you deal with the fact that your brain does, in fact, behave differently from other people? It's called Delivered from Distraction by Edward Hallowell and John Rady. It might be Ratty. But that book, I read this probably 15 years ago when I was first starting my actual career, in other words, out of college. And it helped me understand why I behave, why I think the way I do. And even for people who don't have ADHD, it might be a useful window into maybe their loved ones that do, or maybe their own natural inclination to being distracted. Those books have helped me figure out the best possible treatment plan, the best possible, I'll say, mental stability for dealing with the way my mind works. And I don't say this to be bragging, because it is absolutely not intended as bragging, but my mind just works differently from most other people. And I find that ADHD people either are fully aware of that fact or are not at all aware of that fact. And the book Driven to Distraction fills in the gap.
Okay, very cool. Thank you. To sort of wrap up, we're going to go in a little bit of different direction here. Would you give our listeners who maybe are just getting started, what sort of words of wisdom or advice would you give to them who, you know, they're looking to get started, they're looking to get a leg up in their careers? Kind of what would you say to them specifically?
Teach. And it doesn't necessarily matter how you teach. You could write a blog. You could do a video series. You could host a podcast. You could do all kinds of various different things. You could go to your local community college and be an adjunct professor. But the only way to truly know you understand your stuff is to teach it to somebody else. Because at that point, you now can see the holes in your logic. Or rather, if you don't see it, they will. And they will tell you, and then you can go fill in those holes. The best way to know that you know the thing you're talking about is to try to teach it to somebody else.
Very cool. Very cool. How about if our listeners want to follow you specifically, is there a social media or some place where they should do that?
Yep, there certainly is. I write a blog. That blog is called Exception Not Found. I'm Exception Not Found on basically everything. So I'm Twitter and GitHub. You can find me as Exception Not Found. On Twitter, there's no O or U in found, because apparently that was too long a name. I'm also on LinkedIn, although if you Google for Matthew Jones, you will almost certainly not find me. I have an extraordinarily common name, so you'll probably just want to go to the blog and use the link from there.
All right, and then we certainly know you from speaking engagements and have seen you around on many conferences. Do you have any other speaking engagements that are kind of up and coming that you could kind of shout out?
So I don't at the moment. The most recent one I completed was CodeMash back in January. I have applied to several, but I generally only do a few a year. I usually only do two or three a year. I've got some hopefuls coming up, so if I get accepted to any of them, I'll put it on my Twitter and the blog.
Cool. Awesome.
All right. Well, thanks, Matthew. Really appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah. Thank you very much for having me.
That was Matthew Jones. Matthew is a programmer, a dad, a husband, a geek, a blogger, a speaker, lots of things. For the last 10 plus years, he's been working in business with the .NET framework and dabbling in other technologies along the way.
If you like this episode, please like, rate, and review on iTunes.
Find show notes, blog posts, and more at sixfiguredev.com.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at sixfiguredev.
This has been another episode of the Six Figure Developer Podcast, helping others reach their potential. I am John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I'm John Ash.